listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, yesterday I went on this rant about how I want my government bureaucrats back. Like, you know, we've outsourced all this spying to these companies that are ringing Washington, D.C. We've got all these billionaires building mansions, you know, with 35 bedrooms in them and live-in help and all this on our nickel. When this work used to be done by good old-fashioned government employees who are making 30, 40, 50,000 bucks a year, working 40 years, getting a pension and an insurance plan and retiring. And it just seems like it's screwed up. And I was going on and on about how, you know, this whole experiment, this whole libertarian experiment of, well, let's just privatize things. You know, the private sector can do things better. All it's done is created a bunch of millionaires. In fact, well over 1,000 multimillionaires, CEOs within the defense industry, within the security industry. And, you know, guys earning 200,000 bucks a year spying on everybody from Hawaii paradise, you know, with the GED. I mean, I think it's nuts. But let's check with the libertarian. Matthew Feeney is the editor, the assistant editor of Reason 24/7, the website reason.com, the libertarian newsletter and news site. Matthew, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So isn't this an example of where the libertarian theory that government can do nothing right and everything should be done by somebody, you know, in it for a buck breaks down?
No, I think actually the recent scandal is a perfect illustration of how libertarians are right, that big government is really dangerous. And I don't think that the fact that, you know, that defense contractors are used is much of an argument against big government, much of an argument against the limited government at all.
The NSA, the National Security Agency, has an inspector general. If somebody inside the NSA says, you know, this is wrong, this is unconstitutional, I got a problem with this, there's a chain that they can go to that person. Booz Allen Hamilton is owned by the Carlyle Group, which is owned in part by the Bush family. And if you're working, particularly as a low-level grunt at Booz Allen Hamilton, and you're going to try and take on the Carlyle Group, I think you got a whole different range of problems. Plus, if you or I think we're being screwed by the NSA and we want to do a Freedom of Information Act filing, we can get information about what's going on inside our government by our government employees. But if you want to find out what's going on at Booz Allen Hamilton or at Carlyle Group, not only will they not tell you, but if you stand in front of their building with a sign saying, I want to know what's going on, like you can do in front of Congress, they will have you arrested.
Right, but, I mean, isn't the problem that these contractors are working under laws that Congress passes anyway? I mean, the Patriot Act was not passed by a private company. It was passed by Congress.
That's my point. You guys convinced Ronald Reagan and his merry band that libertarianism and Republican and privatization, it's all, oh, they're going to do it better. They're going to do it more efficiently. They're going to do it faster. And no, they took a whole bunch of our money. Their stockholders are making billions. Their CEOs are making millions. We're getting screwed and spied on.
So, I didn't convince Ronald Reagan of anything, but I think it's important. I don't know who you're referring to, but
I'm referring to the whole libertarian philosophy. You know, the Koch brothers all the way back to Father Freddie.
Right, but keep in mind that it's something libertarians have been saying for a long time, is that what the U.S. military does abroad is way, way too much. Our defense budget is way too big, and that includes a lot of these problems we have with contractors. We wouldn't need all these people involved in all this shady stuff if our military budget wasn't so vast and we weren't involved everywhere in the world.
That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is I haven't heard any kind of cogent response to this other than just a denial from you, Matthew, that this case, for example, demonstrates how dumb it is to privatize part of the commons. I'm totally with you guys. I don't want the government owning the means of manufacture or distribution for the vast majority of things. I don't want the government making my soap. I don't want to make my car. I don't want to make my computer. But when it comes to spying, when it comes to national security, when it comes to the ability to ruin somebody's life, put somebody in jail, use the force that you talk about, you know, guys with guns showing up, I would like it to be people where I can issue a Freedom of Information Act request and find out just what the hell's going on, where I can protest out in front and I'm protected, constitutionally protected by the First Amendment, and they can't stop me. Where I can, in fact, if I don't like what the CEO of the Carlyle Group and Booz Allen Hamilton is doing, I could get that person removed. You can do that with elected officials, and arguably you can do that with government bureaucrats. You can't do that with private corporations.
But sorry, I mean, just asking to try and clarify the position. Do you think that the information that was leaked could have been obtained through a FOIA request to somewhere like the Pentagon or the NSA? I'm sorry, maybe I'm completely misunderstanding the argument here. Do you mind clarifying?
Sure. I'll clarify. I think you've mixed up two points. One is I'm saying that Edward Snowden, who felt that what he was being asked to do at Booz Allen Hamilton and for the Carlyle Group as part of their contract with the NSA was wrong. He says he had no mechanism, and I'm sure the company has internal mechanisms, but he didn't feel safe using them. Like, for example, if you work for the NSA, you can go to the Inspector General's office and file an anonymous complaint, and it will remain anonymous forever, right? But somebody will investigate that, and somebody's going to find out, and you're not going to lose your job. He did not feel like he could do that. He saw something going on that was wrong, but it was being done wrong in a private corporation, number one. Number two, if you or I, as taxpayers who are paying for this stuff, if you or I thought, you know, the NSA has gone too far. They are read my grandma's emails or my girlfriend's or my wife's or mine, and without Fourth Amendment, without somebody having sworn under oath that there's probable cause that a crime is being committed, and I would like to know what the details of what they're doing are, what those details are. If you wanted to find out what the NSA is up to, you can file a Freedom of Information Act, and they are forced to respond. Their response may be, sorry, we can't tell you national security, but they are forced to respond. On the other hand, if you want to find out what Booz Allen is doing or what the Carlyle Group is doing, they can have you arrested for harassing them.
I mean, I'm not aware of particular cases where people have been harassed by private companies for this sort of thing, but I mean, the fact that you've admitted
talk to any
that
animal
even
rights protester.
Animal rights protesters for defense contractors.
Well, you know, actually, you can talk to any of, you know, there's lots and lots of people who have protested defense contractors and been arrested over the years. Berrigan Brothers back in the 60s were probably the most famous, but it's been going on continuously.
Right, but I think if we, you've said that were a FOIA request for this sort of information even issued, that it would come back with nothing.
Not and necessarily. The fact that, it could. It does. They
well,
do occasionally. But, I mean, you know, the way that we learned, for example, that throughout January, February, March, and April of 2001, 6 months before 9/11, that Dick Cheney's principal activity was carving up the oil fields in Iraq and determining over 100 different companies in about 60 different countries to which he was going to sell that oil. The way that we determined that was because a right-wing group, Larry Klayman's Judicial Watch down in Florida, very, very conservative group, filed a Freedom of Information Act request, and they were actually able to extract those maps and that evidence that Cheney was selling, you know, was literally cutting deals to sell Iraq's oil long before we were even having a public dialogue about whether we should be bombing Iraq. So, yeah, that happened within the government. Had Dick Cheney outsourced that, had it not been Dick Cheney, had that conversation been going on at Booz Allen or at the Carlyle Group, we never would have, you know, Larry Klayman never would have been able to file a FOIA Act request.
Right, but I mean, but there's nothing to have. Keep in mind that, you know, Edward Snowden leaked this stuff because of the lack of transparency. There's no, I find
it.
He didn't
leak any stuff. What he leaked was the ability. He did not release any information other than the existence of a program. He did not release the details of the program.
Right, but you accept though that even in an environment where it's very difficult to complain about things, you know, in a private company, there are ways in which to make, you know, abuses that you think.
No, private companies are kingdoms. They're not democracies. They're not republics.
I fail to see how this is an argument. How would you have preferred these private things to be run?
I don't think that we should have any private contractors involved in spying or the military at all.
Right, but I mean, if that depends if you want an actual effective military on it. The fact is that these people do.
Well, I thought we did a great job in World War II without them. Hang on just a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Matthew, I'm sorry I didn't leave you with the last word. Reason.com is the website, Matthew Feeney. You can read all about it over there. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, this is fascinating. Robert Scheer, right? Who would have known? You know, he says, hey, it's true. As filmmaker Michael Moore once warned us, the Carlyle Group is Big Brother. This is a private equity firm. Some call them pirate equity firms. You know, Mitt Romney has one, Bain Financial. This one was George Herbert Walker Bush's at one point in time. You know, he was the president or some big cheese right after he became he left the White House. The Carlyle Group. James Baker III was there, his Secretary of State. Actually, there's been some Democrats, Bill Clinton's chief of staff, Mac McClarty and Arthur Levitt. And the guy, Arthur Levitt, was the guy that Clinton made the head of the SEC. He was on the Carlyle Group, too. Anyhow, turns out Carlyle Group owns Booz Hamilton Allen, which owns your phone calls and your emails. And which websites you looked at yesterday and for how long? And which websites you looked at 5 years ago and for how long? Oh, really? You were? Seriously? Oh, it was just research. Okay, I understand. James Clapper, who is the guy in charge of intelligence in the Obama administration, used to be a senior executive over at Booz Allen Hamilton Carlyle. And the current vice chairman of Booz Allen, John McConnell, used to be the chief intelligence officer in the George W. Bush administration. Isn't there something sick about this? I mean, isn't there some point where you look at this and you say, okay, we're paying taxes, and make no mistake about it. Working class people, middle class people are paying way more as a share of their income in taxes than Mitt Romney or his ilk, you know, than the Limbaughs or the Romneys or the Rockefellers of the world or whatever. Our tax dollars are going into a black box. The NSA budget is a secret. Nobody knows what their budget is. But they've got over 1,000 different private for-profit corporations, over 10,000 locations, presumably hundreds of thousands of employees. Let's not even talk about the technology costs. They're building a city that's three times larger than the Pentagon, and the Pentagon is the size of a small city. And we have no say over it, and they're privatizing this stuff. And the people running intelligence in the Bush administration used to work for Carlyle Group, and the people who now work for Carlyle Group used to run intelligence in the Bush administration. Did I say Bush a minute ago? I meant Obama. And isn't this what Dwight Eisenhower warned us about? I mean, beware the military-industrial complex. And then after 9/11, it became the military-industrial-congressional-security-media-big-business transnational corporation complex. Isn't there a point at which Americans are going to say, you know, I just want back that government that George Washington had three horses shot out from underneath him for? Now, I realize Ronnie Reagan and all the Republicans ever since have said, you know, no, government's not the solution. Government's the problem. Government's a terrible thing. I disagree. I don't hate America the way that the Republicans and the conservatives and the libertarians do. I'm quite proud of this country. We got some stuff we got to work on. I mean, you know, unemployment in the minority communities is like 50% in some places, particularly youth unemployment. Women are making 70% of what men make for the exact same job. We got military bases all over the world in places where not only shouldn't we be, they frankly don't want us. We're dropping bombs on people who, you know, for no good reason I can figure out. So, you know, we've got a few problems. But that's kind of the cool thing about the form of government that Washington and his, you know, merry band of buddies in the early days and the subsequent generations have worked to not just create, as Washington did, but to improve, to enfranchise more and more and more Americans so that we can have a government, to paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, of the people, by the people, for the people. not a government whose primary purpose is to serve as a siphoning device between taxpayers and the CEO of Booz Allen Hamilton division of Carlyle Group, who makes his, you know, $3.5 million a year. I mean, isn't there some point at which we can say enough already? Isn't there some point at which Americans can say, you know, it's crazy that we are handing off to private, for-profit corporations our tax dollars to do things that used to be done, and were done very well, by the way. You know, we won World War II. And Dwight Eisenhower was not running around Europe with Halliburton. In fact, I mean, you know, given how Halliburton was building facilities in Iraq that were electrocuting our soldiers, probably we wouldn't have won World War II if we'd been doing this. At what point are we going to say enough already? You know, the functions of government are arguably sacred stuff. I mean, this is, you know, democracy with a small d and a republic with a small r. Yes, we're not perfect. Yes, we've got a lot of work to do. We're moving in many ways in the right direction. We've got you know, a good man as a president. We've got don't get me started on Daryl Issa and the Republicans in the House of Representatives. But anyhow, there's still hope. But why are we giving trillions of dollars to for-profit corporations to just suck this stuff off the top and do things in ways that are completely unaccountable to the rest of us, for which we cannot, you know, you're not even allowed to ask them? It's just wrong. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You know, it was Michael Moore who back about a decade ago said the Carlyle Group is Big Brother. Guess what? He was right. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. 34 minutes past the hour. I'm still on my rant about this, and I think I need to be, because the corporate media is not going to discuss it. The corporate media in America is not going to discuss the corporatization of national security. They probably own stock in each other. Conservative, liberal, you name it, they're not going to discuss it. And this is something that should concern us. Corporations are not elected institutions. Corporations are not democratic institutions. Corporations are not operated as republics. Corporations are kingdoms. They have kings and lords. We call them CEOs and senior executives and stockholders. And they have serfs. We call them workers. And they are answerable to nobody except their kings and their lords. Not to you, not to me, not to anybody. Ultimately to the law, arguably, but that's not what we're talking about here. And handing off to private for-profit corporations essential functions of government, like spying, is nuts. Not to mention inefficient, wasteful, expensive. Well, anyhow, I have done my rant here, I think, enough that you got my point. Frank in Garner, North Carolina, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Frank, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, actually, I called to talk about what's going on with President Obama and all the stuff with the DOJ and the NSA and all those other things like Gitmo. Because a lot of my progressive friends are really disappointed with the president that he hasn't kept his promises, that he's done this DOJ stuff, that he's done the NSA stuff. And I keep, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Tom, but he has tried to close down Gitmo. Congress said no.
Congress not only said no, Congress passed a law in 2001, and they've repeated it every single year, saying that he may not use one single appropriated dollar to close Gitmo.
Okay, and well, I'm just, then... Also, I also believe that President Obama and his Justice Department has tried to curtail what was in the Patriot Act, like the essentially spying on or eavesdropping on AP and the Fox News guy.
Yeah.
But Congress again said no. And I'm trying to point out that if you really want to get rid of something and they keep on blocking you, you show everybody just how bad it is. Now, the progressives, like myself and I guess you and most of your listeners, they want to get rid of it from almost day one. Most of them hated it from the very first day that it started. But how do you get the Republicans on? Well, you put a black man in charge, and you give him the same power that they think should only be for the George Bushes of the world. And that's how you defeat it. But
And it may be. I mean, now you've got now that you have a Democrat in the White House, and as you point out, I mean, for the racist whites out there, you've got an African American in the White House. And that is bringing out opposition from Republicans to things that normally they would support. It's a lousy way to do government. I mean, you know, to hope that, you know, racism is going to drive good public policy. And it's tragic that to, you know, to some extent it may be true, but, so was that your point, Frank?
Well, that was one of my points, but if I just say quickly on the libertarian aspect of things.
Yeah.
What libertarians forget is that, you know, I like to call it simplistic libertarianism, where if we get rid of government, everybody will hold hands, sing Kumbaya, and be, you know, very Pollyannish. But governments grow organically. It doesn't matter if the form of government is a dictatorship by the guy with the most guns, or in this particular case, as you keep on talking about, the corporate lifestyle that seems to be the new lords and ladies. Government will continue to exist. The problem is that they keep on thinking that because the government that is a representative democracy is not going exactly their way. Obviously, that's a problem. If they get rid of it, everything will go back to exactly the way they want. But they forget that somebody else will impose. When you get rid of a big government that can help, you know, level the playing field, and you break it up so that there's only small players, well, there'll be big fish and little fish and big fish. And the big fish will control what the little fish do every time. In this case, though, it's not going to be that you can go in and vote, stuff like that. It will be decided, as that good old song by the, and the shotgun sings their song.
Yeah. No, good point and well said. Don in Seattle. Hey, Don. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Good topic of discussion. Yeah, my concern is I'd like to see, I remember when the IRS recently audited some of the Tea Party people, I just wonder what kind of powers do the government agencies like the Internal Revenue Service and the General Accounting Office have to follow the money trail and the paper trail just to see exactly where our tax dollars are going as far as the transparency issues, so the American people have the right, you know, for accountability and whatnot.
When it comes to the NSA, there is no paper trail, there is no accountability, there is no oversight other than congressional oversight, and that congressional oversight, tragically, as a consequence of Citizens United and similar Supreme Court decisions, that congressional oversight is being performed by members of Congress who derive a lot of the money that they use to get elected to these positions so that they can be part of the congressional oversight committees. They get that money from the very contractors or people associated with those contractors who they are supposed to have oversight over. And that's, I think, one of the biggest biggest problems that we have right now.
It's conflicts of interest right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And what used to be called bribery and, you know, used to be illegal. And after Nixon and Watergate and all that kind of stuff, we actually made it illegal. And John McCain and Russ Feingold tried to make it even tighter, you know, with McCain-Feingold. And then the Supreme Court came along and said, no, you can't do that. You can't limit money in politics because money is the same thing as speech. I'm like, what? Really? I got a pocket full of speech? I mean, how much speech do you have in your bank account? Is that really? The Supreme Court says, yeah, really, it's speech. And corporations are people. And so, you know, they can buy politicians.
So corrupting everything. It's just corrupting the political system through and through.
That's absolutely right. And then you get George Herbert Walker Bush leaving the White House and going to work for the Carlyle Group, where he's making millions of dollars. And the Carlyle Group, the, you know, owns Booz Allen Hamilton, which just by coincidence gets the contract to spy on all of us. And you know, we wouldn't even know this if it wasn't for Edward Snowden. I mean, or a lot of this stuff. This kid has been missing now for 2 days. I hope he's well. And he said he wanted to start a dialogue. Well, we're having that dialogue here. I know that a lot of our press isn't. I've been watching with dismay in the corporate and generally right-wing media. They're all just sitting around going, traitor, you know, that kind of thing. Or, you know, things like, oh, well, I got nothing to worry about. This made me crazy last night. Don, thanks for the call. Last night there was, you know, one of these commentators, you know, theoretically a liberal commentator saying, well, I'm not worried about, you know, the government hoovering up all my phone calls and, you know, because after all, my bank, I mean, there are employees at my bank who can look at my bank account. There are employees at the phone company who can look at my phone records. I mean, you know, so the government can do it. So what? And I'm yelling at the TV going, the bank can't come to your house and arrest you. The phone company does not have the legal authority to disappear you, to ship you off to a prison and to render you to Egypt to be tortured. This is where, you have to acknowledge the validity, you know, it's a small niche, but the validity of one of the libertarian talking points, which is that we, by creating government, we said, you know, there's got to be some supreme power. We are not, you know, we're not just going to govern ourselves merrily forever and just expect that every person's going to do the right thing. There has to be somebody who has the authority to pull out a gun and put it in somebody's face on behalf of the rest of us with the power of law. Now, libertarians take that to, you know, an absurd extreme, saying that taxes are a form of force because if you don't pay your taxes, men with guns will come and get you. And sort of, I mean, it doesn't happen very often, but they certainly have the authority. Government has that authority. And so to that point, to say, well, you know, okay, I don't care if they know what I'm doing, because Amazon knows what I'm doing. Google knows what I'm doing. They can read my email. Google can't send a guy to your door with a gun. Google can't throw you in jail for the next 6 years. Your bank is not going to be able to haul you out of your car and throw you in the back of a paddy wagon and stick you in the hole for a year. I mean, government can do those things. When government starts acquiring these kinds of power and this kind of information, and particularly when they do it using a private corporation as a front group so that it cannot be subpoenaed, it cannot be accessed through a Freedom of Information Act request, then I think we should be concerned.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You know, when Bush put us on this path in 2001 after 9/11, this whole, you know, these terrified little men in the Bush administration, we fundamentally changed this country. We've got to change it back. 7 minutes before the hour, welcome back to the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program. And, oh, somebody disagrees with me. How cool is that? JC in Fort Huachua,
hello,
Arizona. Is that how you say it? Hey, JC.
Yes, Huachuca. It's kind of difficult to
Okay. Huachuca. Okay. Yeah, it is. So what's up?
I guess I have a different viewpoint than you, and I guess I'll caveat that. I'll preface it with the fact that I'm a pretty staunch progressive, but I'm a member of the armed service. In fact, I'm an intelligence member of the armed services. This area that I'm in, Fort Huachuca, is the intelligence center of the U.S. Army. So a lot of the things you've been talking about as far as, you know, the contracting and thing like that are pretty true, but there are some things, I guess, that people may not know. In this particular area, as I've stated, well, rather in 2001, like you stated, I guess George Bush pretty much sold a lot of the things that the military did as far as the assets that we could provide and capabilities to provide to corporations. But by and large, I was very much against KBR, what they did with the no bidding contracts and stuff like that. And I thought that was very seditious and on the part of the vice president. But, I don't think that a lot of Americans understand exactly, you know, what the intelligence community does for them. And I do agree with you that there should be a degree of transparency. So that way they just don't say, well, we're preventing this, that, and the other thing, but we can't talk about it, because if we do that, then we're going to give up all our secrets.
Yeah. I mean, just to be clear, JC, I'm not saying we shouldn't be spying. And I'm not saying that you know, we shouldn't have, you know, good intelligence. I would like us to have the best intelligence in the world. I'm saying it shouldn't be done by for-profit corporations. It should be done by government employees like yourself, who are answerable to a chain of command and for whom there are inspector generals and systems through which people can say, hey, I've discovered, you know, something stinks here. Something's rotten. And that it should be under, and to the extent that there can be transparency, there should be transparency.
If there's a moral ambiguity to any type of oversight, then you would agree to say that oversight shouldn't be conducted by whoever would be conducting it if it's ambiguous, right?
I take this back to constitutional principles. The spying apparatus of this country, and the military for that matter, is under the executive branch, the second branch of government. The authorization for that and the oversight of that is held with the first branch, the legislative branch, and when there's a conflict between the two, then the third branch, the judiciary, makes that decision. And that's why you have, for example, FISA courts. We back in 1978, there was, okay, we got to spy on people. The Fourth Amendment of the Constitution says you can't spy on people without a court order. Well, you know, we can't have a court order because they're all public events. So Congress created the first branch of government, created a third branch of government entity, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act courts, and said, okay, here's a secret court, but it's still a court. It's still, you know, it's a judicial process. This is a good thing.
I completely agree that that oversight is
But see, Bush stopped using them. Bush just stopped using them.
Prior to 2001, you didn't have Booz Allen and Kaki and, Halliburton or any of these.
No, Halliburton was within months of going bankrupt the day that Dick Cheney was selected by the Supreme Court as vice president.
When the wars kicked off just in this town alone, all of these contract corporations literally stood up. And there's thousands of soldiers here who performed those jobs that were kind of, I wouldn't say they were pushed out of those jobs, but a lot of those individuals got out of the military.
Oh, they were pushed out of those jobs. Let's just say it, JC. There were a lot of good soldiers who were doing a lot of good work, and suddenly that same work was being done by people who were being paid four times as much, and their company was being paid eight times as much. And it's crazy.
I would say that, too. There's fraud and abuse when it comes to that, because we will literally – I'm an intelligence analyst in the military. We will play an intelligence analyst who is a civilian from one of these places 20 times as much, and I'm a staff sergeant in the Army, 20 times as much as what I make to do the same job, and I have 10 years of experience.
Yeah, that's nuts. So you said you disagreed with me when you first called. So far, we've been agreeing with each other.
I guess the only thing that I would say, and this is my last comment, is I think there's a declination diagram to be drawn up when you would compare what Obama is doing or what he allowed to happen compared to what Nixon was doing as far as spying. I mean,
I am not trying to compare Barack Obama to Richard Nixon in any way. What I was saying was
Bush, even though I loathe Bush and I'll be the first, and I loathe Bush beyond comprehension, but even him, I can tell you, I wish that I really could discuss what I want to discuss, but I can't, but there's a level of oversight that you really wouldn't be privy to unless you were a part of the intelligence community. And there's a scrutiny placed upon individuals that I would say, I guess I agree with you that the government employees probably have a little bit more than maybe this is the private security firms, things of that nature. But
I want you, JC, and your fellow government employees to be the ones who are doing the spying on behalf of me. I don't want it to be some corporation that's owned by the Carlyle Group, which is in part owned by a Saudi sheikh.
Yeah, I guess that's that becomes a little hairy there.
You know, yeah, I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, this is what I think it comes down to. And you know, to the extent that this thing is running, you know, that this train is running down the tracks while President Obama is the president, well, he's not the one who started it on the track. He's not the one who and frankly, there's a lot, you know, Congress is the one that authorizes this stuff. I think the president has the bully pulpit. He has the moral authority and the ability to make some changes here, and he has addressed this. He's seems to be of the opinion that everything is, you know, it's okay. My sense is that he really does want to make some changes. He was opposed to a lot of this stuff back when he was running for president, as you will recall. So there is a, you know, I guess maybe, you know, you become president, you see things differently, but.
It's going to definitely reduce in time as the military, because the military is drawing down, and a lot of these contractors who are doing these jobs have been getting furloughed and things of that nature, because I think we're coming to the point when we no longer need to pay $2 billion or $2 million when soldiers and Marines and sailors can do the same exact job, and they have a little bit more, a better level of oversight than some of these.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we were paying Halliburton $1 million a person to have, you know, guys that were just, you know, vacuumed off the streets in rural Texas, putting together buildings that were electrocuting our soldiers in Iraq. And, you know, it was, what are we doing? When, you know, a soldier who, a career soldier who'd been, you know, in the military and, you know, part of a construction corps could have done the same thing for, you know, $35,000 a year or whatever, you know. Anyhow, JC, thank you for the call, and I wish you could share more with us. I understand your position.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. You heard for most of the last hour, if you were listening, my rant about, in my opinion, of the general insanity of the libertarian notion. In fact, we spent the first 15 minutes of the hour debating Matthew Feeney from Reason Magazine, of the general insanity of handing over to private corporations our national security apparatus and our national security systems. And this, I mean, there are multiple dimensions to this. And Shahid Buttar is with us. He is the executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and an attorney, a civil rights attorney, BORDC, as in Bill of Rights Defense Committee, .org is his website. And Shahid, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tom. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for coming back on the program. Let's go back to first principles here. To what extent does our government have the permission, and to what extent do they have the potential to abuse that permission to compromise our individual civil rights in the name of the greater good and national security?
I love that you ask the question that way, because it gives me a novel way to answer it. Our government certainly does not have the permission of we the people. That's expressed in the Constitution that founded the Republic. It has gained the permission of Congress, particularly in the FISA Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act amendments of 2008, when in the middle of the presidential campaign in 2008, Congress, with then-Senator Barack Obama's support, authorized exactly what the original FISA law in the 1970s was passed to prohibit, basically giving the keys away to the National Security Agency. So Congress has given permission, even if we the people have not. The matter has appeared before the Supreme Court, which decided just this spring in Clapper versus Amnesty International, that the NSA stands above the law, that until someone can produce secret government documents that establish that they are the object of surveillance, no one anywhere has the right to challenge that illegitimate, abusive, corrupt, and clearly unconstitutional surveillance. And that's the state of the law.
Yeah, and that was a very Osirian, catch-22 type of Supreme Court decision. Quite. We can't decide this because you don't have the proof, and you don't have the proof because the government won't give it to you, and your whole complaint in the case is that the government won't give you the proof.
Right. Exactly. And I've written a lot about it in terms of its implications for privacy and accountability. One thing I haven't talked much about but that is really meaningful here is that the role of the courts. We're talking about the courts marginalizing themselves as an independent institutional check on executive abuses. And that ultimately degrades the republic in much the same way that the corporate takeover of Congress degraded the republic. And we see both of those forces coming to a head in the National Security Agency's assault on the Fourth Amendment.
It was James Madison who said that no nation could exist as a democracy. I'm paraphrasing wildly here. I don't remember the exact quote, but words to the effect of during times of war, the powers of the executive are greatly expanded. His ability to pass out favors, to actually have executive power, and that in part for that reason, because of that expansion of executive power during time of war, no republic can exist over the long term in a state of perpetual war. Isn't the state of perpetual war pretty much what we have now? And to what extent has that been brought about by, like we have this perpetual war on drugs, which is being promoted by the for-profit prison industry and the for-profit drug testing industry? Mm-hmm. And, to what extent do we have a perpetual war on God only knows what or whom? The various days of the week, so whether it's terrorists or Islam or Iraqis or, we've got this perpetual state of war that seems to be brought about by a perpetual state of war industry.
Absolutely. And it's war industries. You located the private prison industry. There's also all the weapons manufacturers. And I think the latest front for them is particularly interesting. It's local police departments to whom they want to sell drones for surveillance purposes. What we're observing here is the military-industrial complex that President Eisenhower warned us about 60 years ago, turning its fangs on the American people and doing it in a way that is doubly corrupt because they're taking our money to do it. And this is an area where, I find my line on the Obama administration with respect to my own political beliefs is that it's turning me into a libertarian. Right. I used to have a.
No, don't do that, Shahid. Please,
well,
please don't.
I'll give it to you like this. It is.
That's like heroin. it numbs the pain for a while, but seriously, long term consequences are awful. I'm sorry.
Talking to you is my methadone in that.
Okay, there you go.
But no, it does strike me as doubly offensive that there is a constitutional wound in the surveillance en masse, untethered from any suspicion at all. Which is just to say we live in a surveillance state of precisely the sort that the Constitution was set up to prevent.
Right.
And at the same time, it is our taxpayer dollars being used to do it in secret, being given to corporations who have been immunized by Congress from lawsuits by we the people demanding remedies for the abuses of our rights. And that's corrupt in so many different dimensions because it's the telecom companies lobbying Congress for immunity, gaining access to taxpayer funds as a corporate teat, and then being insulated for the abuses that they heap on us with the backing of the government later on when these abuses finally come to light. And now you have members of Congress throwing up their hands and running for the hills saying, oh, I didn't contemplate this when I wrote the Patriot Act.
Right.
Give me a break.
Yeah, Sensenbrenner. Yeah, but and I don't disagree at all with anything you said. And I would add to that that had the Supreme Court not back in the mid 19th century and right up until today, literally, had they not invented out of whole cloth this dual doctrine that corporations are persons and money is speech, a doctrine that not only has never been voted for by any legislature, but has been voted against hundreds of times by state and federal legislatures and been decried by presidents from Thomas Jefferson through Grover Cleveland's 1887 State of the Union address, where he talked about corporations, which should be the carefully constrained servants of the people, have become their masters. The iron heel of the corporate boot is now upon the neck of the average citizen. I mean, this was 1887. He was talking about the 1886 Santa Clara County case. The president of the United States in his State of the Union address. That without that doctrine, we would not have the corruption of our government by these corporations. And the libertarians would love to have even more corruption by corporations because they say that, governments are always corruptible and corporations are incorruptible. So take off all the limits from the corporations. But I will give the libertarians this, and this is I was riffing about this earlier. last night I heard a, quote, progressive commentator say, I'm not all worried about this because Google already can read my email, and the you know, the guy, my the unemployed at the bank can look in my checking account. You know, why should I worry?
And Washington Post with the same idea.
Yeah, and my response is, you know, Google cannot show up at your house with a gun.
Right.
You know, the bank employee is not cannot legally take you off and render you to Egypt. And
yeah, the state, because it has the monopoly on the armed use of force. Right?
That's
absolutely
right. But our government can, the point that the libertarians make. And that's why, frankly, it's so horrific. We just have have 30 seconds left, so I'm sorry, Shahid. But what do we do about this?
This is really about a clarion call to the American people to come together across those political divisions, across the divisions we might have about the society we want, to join together around those first principles that you mentioned. Whether or not we've given permission to our government to abuse our rights wantonly, without any shred of indignation. And this will take a grassroots movement. I would invite your listeners to reach out to us at organizing@bordc.org. We work with grassroots to build grassroots coalitions around the country, and that's what it's going to take to restore civil liberty.
Shahid Buttar, the executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and the civil rights attorney, BORDC.org, as in Bill of Rights Defense Committee.org is the website. Be sure to check it out. Shahid, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Always great to talk. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, step by step, row by row, going to make this garden. You know, we have to get on this. We've got a big job. It's the True People's Media, talk media for the rest of us, the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Malcolm in Park Forest, Illinois, listening on WCPT. You think, well, I'll let you say what you think.
Well, I don't disagree with you entirely. I can understand why Snowden did what he did.
Mm-hmm.
I just have a problem with the way he did it. When you give things to the media, you know, if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
And we have a tendency, in the American public, to jump to a lot of conclusions. We're not privy to a lot of things going on in the CIA or the NSA or the NSC. So there are a lot of repercussions that can happen out in the field with agents and things when something like this comes out. So.
Well, here's
on the inside, I would think he could have found a better way to contact someone, a friendly person, or, you know.
Here's what he did that was different than what most people think Bradley Manning did, although Bradley Manning actually was pretty careful in redacting a lot of the information that he provided to WikiLeaks, and then they went through and redacted a lot of the information he gave them before it went public, to the point that the Inspector General's Office of the United States said that Manning's release did not put anybody's life at risk. What Edward Snowden did is he said, I could tell you the details of these programs, but I'm not even going to tell you the name of the program. You know, PRISM, the name of the program, that was given to us by Clapper, by our own security people. Said, yes, there is such a program. Here's the name of it. And but we're not going to tell you anything more. But what Snowden did is he said, you know, here I am, this low-level grunt working for a private corporation, you know, making $200,000 a year in Hawaii, working for a company that works for Carlyle Group. And I've got access to all this, I can listen in on Michelle Obama's phone calls. And there's something wrong with that. It shouldn't be. Now, that I don't think puts anybody at risk. If anything, I think that's going to cause a lot of this stuff to get tightened up.
A lot of things are going behind this thing. We're not privy to everything that's going on, Tom, in the intelligence community. You
of course not.
So I'd like to err on the side of caution. So I don't have a problem with what he did. I have a problem with the way he did it. And, you know, we're acting like somebody who goes on a date and goes to the bathroom and somebody slips a pill in their drink, and they knew that the person that they were drinking with has a tendency to do these kind of things because they've seen them do it to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cry, oh, boy, you know, how could they do this to me? So I hate the Patriot Act. I think most American citizens hate the Patriot Act. And that's what needs to happen. But think about some of the things that FDR did back during World War II, immediately prior to the war, the things that he could have been impeached for.
Yeah. Well, and what he did with the Japanese. Yeah.
just some scientific objective thought to how we react to these things. Now, we're acting the same way we did when we lost the House of Representatives in 2010. Okay?
How so?
It's just we start Obama bashing, Democratic Party bashing, and all this stuff. And so far as I'm concerned, Obama and the Democrats, ones that are trying to do the right thing by this nation, because the conservative right wing, they go to Ronald Reagan's diction, never criticize a Republican in public. I'm not saying don't hold them accountable for what they do, but I think we should do a better job of getting all the facts, not being so emotional about things,
yeah,
and flying off the handle before we get all our ducks in a row. And that's what I have a problem with.
Okay. I acknowledge that. And let me say, I have pretty much not brought President Obama into this, other than pointing out that as Senator Obama, he was taking the position that basically Edward Snowden is taking.
Well, you know what? When you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed like Barack Obama, I firmly believe he's a good man with a good heart. I think he meant all the things that he promised and wanted to do. But once you get in that room, after you get your hand off the Bible, you get in there and you find out who's really running things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Corporate power, Wall Street, the international.
I totally agree with you, Malcolm. And I think that one of the problems that we have is that the system has been corrupted by this Supreme Court doctrine that allows these big corporations to give huge campaign contributions to members of Congress that then pass legislation that puts these corporations in charge of our national security, when it should be like that soldier who called in earlier, the staff sergeant who's doing military intelligence, and he's got people working beside him who are private contractors making 20 times what he makes. That's wrong. And that's not Barack Obama's fault. This is the seeds of this stuff were planted in the whole libertarian ideology of the Reagan administration the government is not the help. Government is the enemy. Really?
To the young man about wanting to do things, I'm a committee of one. You know, I'm active in the local Democratic organization.
Right.
I tell people to listen to you and Ed Schultz, watch MSNBC. I give people copies of your book, refer to your book. On my kitchen table, I have Unequal Protection and The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein. And another thing from the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, intelligence thing. So
yeah.
I'm active in the community. I have formed community groups to throw drug dealers out of my community. I've taken a chance on my life to get rid of drug dealers.
Good on you, Malcolm.
Corrupt politicians. So everybody needs to be a committee of one, and we can solve this problem.
Yes, I agree. Can we agree that the problem is not at the level of any one individual, whether it's the president or a member of Congress or the head of the Carlyle Group or whatever, but that we have a broken system and we need to do something to get money out of politics?
That's right. We need to look in the mirror when we're shaving in the morning, when the ladies are getting the pin curls out of their hair, and look in our own eyes and say, hey, like in that old Pogo cartoon, we have engaged the enemy and the enemy is us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I'm with you, Malcolm. Malcolm, thanks a lot for the call. Well said.
Right.
Well said. Always a thoughtful analysis. And this, hopefully this is where this will go, is that this isn't going to turn into, I really don't think that when Ron Wyden, and actually there's several senators, Ron Wyden, Mark Begich, Democrat from Alaska, Al Franken, Democrat from Montana, John Tester, from Minnesota, John Tester, Democrat from Minnesota, and Mark Udall, from Colorado, that when these Democrats come out and say, let's get together and have some, let's take this thing apart and put it back together again. The FISA courts, the Patriot Act, all this stuff. Let's take it apart and put it back together again and do it right this time.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I don't think that when they're saying that, they are putting down the president or anybody else for that matter. I think that it just stands on its own. So John Boehner comes out and he's asked by George Stephanopoulos, we asked our viewers for questions for you, and so many came in with the exact same theme. Where are the jobs? What is this Congress doing for jobs? Over the weekend, John Boehner on Stephanopoulos' show on CNN, and Boehner says, well, that's interesting, George, because it really is our number one priority. Right. Okay. So John Boehner sets the legislative agenda for the House of Representatives. And so what are they going to vote on? What are they going to debate all next week and then vote on? A nationwide ban on abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. Now, maybe there's some rationale under which that's a jobs bill. What? Womb inspectors? 20 weeks, 21 weeks, 19 weeks? Which is it? Ultrasound operators? I don't know. Maybe it's a jobs bill. Maybe this is the Republicans' plan as a job. But I just, there's people hurting out there. Yes, we have to have a national debate or discussion about abortion. Yes, the Supreme Court blew that up in 73. You know my opinions on that. But jobs? No, the Republicans, they want to do everything they can to keep the economy as bad as it can stay. So at the end of Obama's 8 years, they can say, oh, that was awful. We need a Republican. And then inflict another idiot like Ronald Reagan on us or one of the Bushes. Actually, they're going to try and inflict Jeb Bush on us, mark my words. Mike in Palmer, Alaska. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I kind of lost my train of thought on what I was going to say, but it was the government surveillance. I believe it started with the enactment of the Social Security Act of 1938.
No, I think it probably started with the George Washington administration.
Well, that being said, yes, but the availability of information on those who applied for the Social Security number were subject to other uses. That was the I couldn't find the act.
No, actually, the Social Security Act forbid the use of your Social Security number as an identifier in any kind of commercial or governmental transaction right up until like the 1970s or the 80s. You know, that got changed at some time in my lifetime, because I remember when I was younger, it was against the law to ask for require a Social Security number as a form of identification.
Exactly, and I believe it was a little earlier than that, because in 1976, while I was living in Santa Cruz, California, I was required to go and apply for a Social Security number in order to get a job as a busboy at a restaurant.
So it might have been the 60s.
It
was after I started working in the workplace, and I started in the workplace in 67, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I started about 73, 74 for under the table type. But the key words, though, in one of the provisions of the Social Security Act is, and other uses, is the requirement. It wasn't a requirement because it still is not a requirement. You don't have to apply for a Social Security number in order to work in this country. Okay. And not many people actually realize that.
No, the government will give you an alternative number if you don't have or want a Social Security number.
They'll give you an ITIN, which is also an illegal number. They require some sort of identification to figure out how much tax liability you're going to be under after 20 years of work.
Right. I understand all that, Mike. What's your point?
Yeah. Well, corruption just breeds corruption.
Well, I don't see Social Security as corruption. I mean, you've got to have, if you're going to put together a system where you're going to care for, you know, widows and orphans and retirees, it's got to be some way to organize and identify people that, you know, and this was the early days of filing systems and the very early days of mechanical computers, a number made sense, doesn't it?
Exactly. It does. And I agree with about 80% of the Social Security administrations, and me being disabled myself and trying to extract some money out of them after 37 years of paying into the system, I'm running into roadblock after roadblock. But that's really not my rant. Is the government surveillance has been going on for many, many more years than most people even realize. So it's time to stand up and contact our legislators and congressmen and senators and say, hey, what are we going to do about this?
Yeah, Yeah, and not just enough is enough, but what are we going to do about this? That's the exact thing we need to be saying, Mike. We need to have a national conversation about this, and that's one of the things that really impressed me about Edward Snowden. And there are some things that didn't impress me, but I mean, by and large, the main thing that impressed me was he said, "I am trying to start a national conversation. I'm willing to give up my life. I'm willing to give up my job to start a conversation about this, because the direction that this country is going," now I'm paraphrasing, "the direction that this country is going is not the direction that he personally felt was the American way, shall we say. And I don't disagree with that. I think that we are moving in the direction of a national security state. I don't think we're being driven there. The you know, Fox News, the right wingers, to the extent that they might agree with that, would say we're being driven there by a fascist, socialist, communist, you know, black guy in the White House president. I don't think that's got anything to do with it. However, you know, I don't think Obama's driving this train. Others would say, oh, it's a corrupted Congress. Well, maybe. I think it's being driven by a for-profit industry, a massive multi-billion dollar, perhaps even multi-trillion dollar for-profit industry that is the result of a Supreme Court doctrine, a pair of Supreme Court doctrines that have virtually guaranteed the corruption of our political system. And until we fix those Supreme Court doctrines, and until we, you know, take back our commons, whether it's our roads or our water systems or our prison system or our military or our spy apparatus from these for-profit corporations, we're going to continue to have this kind of corruption, and we're going to continue to need to have this conversation. Well said, Mike. Thanks a lot for the call. Jerry in Amityville, New York. Hey, Jerry, you've got the actual James Madison quote.
Well, not the one on war. I have a different one related to the dangers of gradual and silent encroachments on our liberties. I kind of want to build up to that. I can give it to you right away, or I can kind of build into it, because in my opinion, you know, with respect to this whole issue of NSA getting the phone records of 112 million Verizon customers without probable cause, violation of the Fourth Amendment, seemingly. Well, you know, first of all, I have to disagree with the previous caller, Malcolm's, one of his points that we should avoid criticizing President Obama or his administration, because first of all, in my opinion, it's wrong for the government to legally pursue Ed Snowden the way the Obama administration seems poised to do, simply for blowing the whistle, Daniel Ellsberg style, in my opinion, on the NSA.
I don't think Malcolm was saying that, Jerry, and Malcolm's not here to defend himself, so you know it's tough for us to split hairs on that. But to the extent that I'll tell you my interpretation of what I thought he was saying, and I feel the exact same way, and that is there are too many of us on the left, and there's almost nobody on the right who does this. Too many of us on the left who are so ready to form the circular firing squad. You know, things aren't going right. Let's all start, you know, let's form the circular firing squad and basically all shoot each other. And on the right, they figured out during the Reagan administration that does not work. They you know, that's what happened with Goldwater. When Barry Goldwater got up in 1964 at the Republican convention, Republican National Convention, first Nelson Rockefeller got up and talked about moderation, and the Goldwater people booed him off the stage. And then Goldwater got up and said, you know, moderation in whatever is no virtue, and moderate and extremism in the pursuit of liberty is no vice. And people wildly cheered. And it was the beginning of this massive schism in the Republican Party that you know, led to and through the Nixon administration. And, you know, the Republicans had succumbed to that circular firing squad thing, too. And I think that that's what Malcolm was decrying. I don't think he was saying that we need to salute the flag every time the president walks by.
Okay. Now, I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to address the larger issue here. And the larger issue is that the NSA has this seemingly unconstitutional program involving getting the phone records of 112 million seemingly innocent Americans who seem to be guilty of nothing more than being Verizon customers. And so,
and not just Verizon, by the way. By the way, I just got a one-minute cue from Shano, Jerry. So if you've got a...
If,
If you got a quote you want to share with us, better do it quick.
Okay. So this is why I think and James Madison goes to the issue of why I think the president was wrong this past Friday in his press conference when he called verbatim these to be modest encroachments on privacy that the NSA is doing with respect to getting all these phone records. What James Madison said is, quote, "I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachments by those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations." And that's what we're seeing. We're all being told to be afraid of the terrorists, to be afraid of this, that, and the other thing. But it's our own government that's threatening our freedoms through gradual and what
it's our own fear, Jerry, and it's an entire industry based on that fear, promoting that fear. Somebody needs to be coming out every single day and saying more people die slipping in the bathtub every year in America than are killed by terrorists. Let's get our heads screwed on straight. Let's stop being the panicked little people that the Bush and Cheney administration wanted us to be. Jerry, excellent quote from Madison. Thank you very much. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So let's not form the circular firing squad. Let's form the talking circle. Let's start the conversation. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. TalkRadioNews.com brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com, where you can give a crystal heart made by women recovering from the effects of the war in South Sudan. In fact, there's Ellen wearing it.
And I'll be in South Sudan leaving a week from today.
To meet with those women who are making...
Meet with the women and take pictures of people with their goats that they donate.
That's great. And that's all at GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. And these pennants were all made by women who saw someone die in front of them. And,
that's right.
Tough time, rough place. So what's going on in the world?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know where to go. Let's just talk, I guess, somewhat good news. The immigration bill, the first vote, the second vote is being held sort of as we speak. The first vote was 82-15. Basically, it shows that vote is going to go to the Senate floor. They will be looking at additional amendments, and the final vote on immigration in the Senate will probably happen either right before or right after the July 4th holiday. They said that they considered, when they were coming up with it in committee, 212 amendments to the bill, 141 were adopted, but of course now they can add a lot more amendments to this bill. And we know that Senator Cornyn and other folks, Senator Cornyn from Texas, are basically saying unless 90% of that border crossings are closed and finished, none of the Dreamers can apply for any kind of citizenship or path to citizenship. Today, the president gave a speech in the East Room today. One of the speakers was a woman who was came to this country as a young girl, spoke flawless English, and has her degree in engineering. This is the kind of person we want,
And she's not a legal citizen.
And she's not a legal citizen.
And John Cornyn would like her thrown into jail or deported.
Yes. Yeah, so deported to somewhere else that can use her skills, I guess.
Yes. It's bizarre.
Yeah, well, what can I say? Okay, so that's immigration reform. Tonight, we don't usually talk about local elections, but there is a debate going on with Ed Markey and the Republican who's looking for that John Kerry seat. You know, Kerry, it's narrowing a bit. The president is coming to Boston tomorrow to raise some money to help Ed Markey's campaign, but the Keystone XL activists are planning on doing a mass protest where he is, and they're also going to be protesting in several cities if the White House takes action on the Keystone pipeline.
This is going to get complicated.
It is going to get complicated. On the NSA hearings today, Google would like the Justice Department to give them permission to talk about how they used and didn't use and who they gave user data to. They have a transparency project, but if it's a FISA court order, they cannot reveal where and when, et cetera, they gave out the data.
Right.
So their hands are kind of tied, and they would like to be transparent because a lot depends on it.
Google's kind of in the position that Ron Wyden was in. They're saying, you know, we'd love to tell you what's going on. We really would.
But we can't.
Right.
And what's so fascinating about that is my friend, and he actually is my friend, Steny Hoyer was touting that Americans are not very upset about this using the Pew Washington Post data, but the Rasmussen data shows exactly the opposite, that people are very upset about this data collection. And my personal view is your tax dollars at work, well, obviously we pay for wars that we don't want to, but are people aware that we're also buying that consumer data every time you use your card in the grocery store or the drugstore or whatever, that that data is collected by those companies, and then that's resold to the U.S. government.
Right, right.
It's not how I want my tax dollars spent, but okay.
No, thank you. And I discovered today that that this company that what's-his-name is working for, Booz Allen Hamilton.
Yes.
You know who Booz Allen Hamilton is owned by? They're owned by the Carlyle Group.
I didn't know that because I always knew them as an independent company 20, 30 years ago.
The old Booz Allen Consulting Company, that got spun off.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So.
They're owned by
getting kind of very strange. I mean, their current head guy is the former John M. McConnell, formerly the vice chairman of Booz Allen, was previously chief intelligence official in George W. Bush administration. James Clapper was formerly a Booz Allen executive. I mean, it just gets very odd.
Yeah. Well, Clapper actually came up today at the White House briefing. The White House rejected a claim who said that Clapper did not provide straight answers. And, of course, this is your friend. And I'm not even, when I talk about Republicans, sometimes I say your friend. But this is actually Ron Wyden that believes that Clapper did not tell the truth to Congress. White House said that is not true. That as far as they know, he did provide straight and direct in the answers he gave. Now, obviously, there's some major questions there.
Yeah.
So that came up. Jay Carney refused to call Snowden a traitor, even though Dianne Feinstein did, and said that they would wait for an investigation in terms of how to proceed. Apparently, John Boehner, in addition to Dianne Feinstein, also called him a traitor. He said, "I won't characterize him or his status." Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. The State Department, there is a report that the Inspector General did under investigation. Jay Carney said there's an active investigation, so he won't comment. This has to do with people on Hillary Clinton's security detail, whether they were engaging in prostitutes, whether the political appointee to the ambassadorship in Belgium got rid of his security detail so he could engage in inappropriate behavior. We're just finding out.
We're just all shocked because some men go to prostitutes. I mean, it's...
Factoid. The folks at No Kid Hungry are talking about the Farm Bill, which gets rid of $4.1 billion in cuts to the SNAP program, which is a food program. We spend $80 billion in collecting data and doing surveillance and spying, and we somehow can't do $4.1 billion in SNAP money. I don't know about that.
Is that how it's? I mean, you know, I know that the Senate was talking that the House is talking a $20 billion cut.
Well, the House is talking a big cut, but so far what's passed is a $4.1 billion cut.
Right, which is still horrible.
It's still horrible.
And then the
Senate bill would make it, I mean, the House bill would make it five times worse.
So if they can't reconcile those two, does it stay where it is or does it actually get...
Well, there will be a conference. If the Farm Bill goes through the House, there will be a conference between the two committees, and you don't want to watch how laws and sausages are made.
Yeah, so we shall see. Okay, Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio and every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on both Dish Satellite Network and DirecTV, and cable systems nationwide by the Free Speech TV Network. more people watch or listen to this program on more stations and outlets than any other progressive talk show in the world. We're so pleased to have you with us. And also to have Andrea Peterson with us, the tech reporter with the Center for American Progress's blog Think Progress, thinkprogress.org, which I frequently am quoting here on the air. Andrea, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Thanks.
Really glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. You've got you wrote a brilliant piece titled, and in fact that's I guess my question, the massive online surveillance program no one's talking about. Tell us about it.
So there, while a lot of people were sort of freaking out about the PRISM program that was talked about during the leaks last week, there was a few other details in the Washington Post original reporting about another program called, well, codenamed Blarney, which looks at metadata as it streams across the fiber optic infrastructure of the internet. Now, The Guardian over the weekend released another slide about that referenced Blarney when they were discussing whether or not there was actually direct access to tech servers via PRISM, that described it as an upstream method of data collection or an option for data collection that allows them to basically harvest information like specifically metadata, so not the communications content, but other technical aspects about web traffic as it goes across the backbone of the internet.
Now,
so
Susan Landau, who's a tech over at Sun Microsystems, is being quoted in this article in The New Yorker, perhaps you've seen this, saying that metadata can actually be more intrusive than individual phone calls. If you knew, for example, that a corporate executive was talking with an investment banker and was talking with, you know, certain other people, you could easily conclude that a merger was about to happen and buy or sell stock based on that. If you saw that a woman had just had a phone call with her gynecologist and then made a phone call to an oncologist and then made a phone call to, you know, her mother or daughter or whatever, you know, to a close family friend, you could conclude. The metadata can be actually much more revealing than the contents of an individual conversation.
I think that's absolutely accurate. The thing is that via metadata, via telephone or internet traffic data, you can infer an awful lot about somebody's real life. You can talk about who they're talking to, where they're going, like physically, their geolocation. There are just a lot of very scary possibilities, which is why it's really interesting to me that the administration has made such a point of saying we're not looking at communications content, so nobody freak out, when in fact a lot of the stuff that they're gathering is very, very invasive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So where did this come from, this program? When did it start? And under what authority does it operate? And has it been outsourced and privatized to private corporations who are unanswerable to things like FOIA requests?
So honestly, a big problem with discussing Blarney as of right now is that we don't have a lot of that information. Hmm. What we do know is that it appears to have an awful lot of similarities to the program that's being described in an ongoing lawsuit brought by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Juul versus NSA. Hmm. And that lawsuit relies on data from Mark Klein, a whistleblower and former AT&T employee who has testified and provided some documentation in that while he was working in a San Francisco AT&T office, NSA agents came into the facility and set up a splitter directly to the fiber optic cables. Then essentially a copy of all the traffic that went through that facility was routed to another room where it could be diverted to an entirely separate network. Mm-hmm. So the AT&T, there was also a separate case, Hetling versus AT&T, that EFF was litigating first, but it was dismissed after the retroactive immunity for the telecom companies, and then this Juul case started up. So if Blarney is the same program that it is referenced in Juul versus his NSA, it's been going on for quite some time.
Right. Well, it seems that most of these go back at some of them before 2001, but I have
in my hands here, to
paraphrase Joe McCarthy, the declassified National Security Agency Central Security Service Transition 2001 document, and it was classified Secret X1, COMINT, whatever that means, but it's been declassified. And they make one interesting comment toward the end. Make no mistake, NSA can and will perform its missions consistent with the Fourth Amendment and all applicable laws. But senior leadership must understand that today's and tomorrow's missions will demand a powerful permanent presence on a global telecommunications network that will host the, quote, protected, end quote, communications of Americans, as well as the targeted communications of adversaries. It sounds to me like by saying that they're going to host the protected communications of Americans as well as the targeted communications of adversaries, they're saying that rather than seizing this stuff, as the Fourth Amendment would imply, you know, a seizure, a search, that they're, by hosting it, they're getting around the Fourth Amendment. Any knowledge of that, thoughts on that? Has there been any follow-up to this? I believe this was just very recently declassified.
You know, I'd have to take a little bit of look at that documentation before I'd feel comfortable specifically commenting on that. Mm-hmm. But I would say that we know from the Verizon order that was leaked last week that FISA courts have essentially authorized the NSA to collect a lot of that data. Now, whether or not they're looking through that without specific FISA court approval, as the Director of National Intelligence has said in declassified documents to sort of clear up confusion about the program, it's certainly very questionable to me personally that the agency would be collecting all of that data to hope.
Right.
Or at least have the possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, this
ability to collect that data.
This is where we need this national conversation. The other thing that concerns me is that, you know, I would like my good old fashioned boring government bureaucrats back. You know, the people who earn a good middle class salary, they've got a pension, you know, 40 years and they're out. They don't care about politics or administration. They just do their job. They have been so replaced now by people like, you know, Ed Snowden making $200,000 a year. And his CEO making $3 million last year, and these contractors are not subject to FOIA and things like that. Mm-hmm. We have just a half a minute left here, Andrea. But do you see any rolling back of this whole Reaganomics thing of privatizing the functions of government?
You know, well, first I'd say that Booz Allen Hamilton has now said that Snowden was not accurately quoting the amount that he was making there. They're saying it was like $122,000 a year, although who knows if that included a bonus structure or overtime pay. Right. But I think the larger issue than contractors is the surveillance problem.
Yeah. Okay. And we need to be having a national conversation on that. You're one of the people leading it. Andrea Peterson over at the Center for American Progress's blog, thinkprogress.org. Brilliant writing, Andrea. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom. It's been
Thank
a pleasure.
You. Give our very best to your colleagues there, too.
Thank you.
15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, data or metadata? Contractors or government employees? I think that we're at a turning point here. 20 minutes past the hour, the New York Times reports Booz Allen Hamilton has become, this is a quote, a verbatim quote, has become one of the largest and most profitable corporations in the United States, almost exclusively by serving a single client, the government of the United States. The firm's 98% of the firm's revenue of $5.8 billion last year came from the taxpayer. Now, this is one of over 1,100 companies that are draining our tax dollars in the name of national security. And we're not even talking about the military stuff here. This is just the secret state stuff. This is just the snooping on you stuff. And just think of this. Ellen Ratner was on just a minute ago saying the Senate just passed an agriculture bill, which is going to keep the $3 million subsidy to the Republican member of the House of Representatives who said people on food stamps are parasites, but is going to cut $4 billion out of the SNAP program, the Supplemental Nutrition Program, the what we call food stamps. So they want to cut $4 billion because we just don't have the money. Booz Allen Hamilton last year took $5.8 billion. Dwight Eisenhower warned us of the rise of the military-industrial complex. That speech is virtually a cliche. I'm not going to play that speech for you again. You've heard it 100 times in your life in all probability. But another speech that he gave while he was president, in fact, is the year in the title? I thought it was 58. I could be wrong. It might have been 56. But in any case, this was a speech that Dwight Eisenhower gave to the American Association of Newspaper Publishers or Editors, one or the other. And it's sometimes referred to as his Cross of Iron speech. And he says, this world of ours at war is, well, I'll let him say it. But I just, you know, it's not the world's best audio. So just listen carefully, because he's saying, the cost is not just money. It is the loss of schools, the loss of hospitals, the loss of food that could feed the hungry. And he quantifies it. One battleship is this many barrels of wheat. One destroyer is this many, well, I shouldn't be giving Ike's speech for him when he can give it himself so well. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States back in the 1950s, Dwight D. Eisenhower, Republican.
A burden of arms, draining the wealth and labor of all people, a wasting of strength that defies the American system or the Soviet system or any system to achieve true abundance and happiness for the peoples of this earth. Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed,
a theft.
Those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. The cost of one modern heavy bomber is this, a modern brick school in more than 30 cities. It is 2 electric power plants, each serving a town of 60,000 population. It is 2 fine, fully equipped hospitals. It is some 50 miles of concrete pavement. We pay for a single fighter plane with 500,000 bushels of wheat. We pay for a single destroyer with new homes that could have housed more than 8,000 people. This is, I repeat, the best way of life to be found on the road the world has been taking. This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron.
Humanity hanging from a cross of iron. The cost of a single destroyer, the cost of a single bomber, schools, food, hospitals. This was the last legitimate Republican president of the United States, legitimately elected Republican president of the United States, Dwight Eisenhower. And, you know, in many ways a prophet. But he knew, Eisenhower knew of what he spoke. He was the guy who, along with Joe Stalin, and I'm no fan of Joe Stalin, but hey, the Russians really won World War II in Europe. But, you know, without a little help, or a lot of help, actually, from Dwight Eisenhower and the Americans, I don't think either one of us would have been able to pull it off, bottom line. But this is the guy, he was the supreme Allied commander of all Allied forces in the European theater, Dwight Eisenhower. And then when he decided in 1952 to run for president, there was actually some debate. You know, is he going to run as a Democrat or Republican? Because he had never professed a party loyalty. He had always been a professional military man. And he decided to run as a Republican. And he won, and he ran, and he won, legitimately. And his campaign slogan was "Vote for Eisenhower, vote for peace." You got that? Here it is. This is
he has met Europe's leaders, has got them working with us. Elect the number one man for the number one job of our time. November 4th, vote for peace. Vote for Eisenhower.
A paid film.
Now, that was 1952, running for his first term. And then the speech you just heard was from either 56 or 50, I'm pretty sure 58, you know, long into that term, years and years into that term. And he was still saying the same thing. A world at war is a world that's insane. A world at war is a world that is refusing to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to house the homeless, to give warmth to those who are cold, was the exact phrase that, as I recall, that Eisenhower used in his Cross of Iron speech. Boy, we could use more statesmen. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of... actually, a couple more thoughts I want to share with you on this. And also, I want to pick up your thoughts on my thoughts. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very Nola Metangerantarianly ugly. I did it. The good. Prince Harry. Turns out the Prince of Wales isn't just a top-notch trooper. He's a fierce advocate of tolerance as well, according to a new memoir of the openly gay former British soldier James Wharton. The prince rescued him from a gang of homophobic bullies during his time in the armed forces. When the gang threatened to beat him up, Wharton told his commander, the prince, who promptly jumped out of the tank they were sharing and physically confronted the six bullies. Wharton said he will always be grateful to Harry because until he went over and dealt with everything, I was on track for a battering. Good work, Harry. It looks like true nobility is alive and well in the 21st century. The bad. Brian Kilmeade. On yesterday's edition of his Fox News radio show, the conservative pundit and host of Fox and Friends gave a ringing endorsement to guest Tommy Robinson. Take a listen.
Well, Tommy, we got your back, and we'll definitely look to keep in touch, and I really think it's very, it's great what you're doing.
Yeah, sounds harmless, right? Not so fast. Robinson is actually the co-founder of a far-right British hate group known as the English Defense League, which is dedicated to fighting Muslim immigration to the UK. Good job, Brian. There's nothing like openly praising a proven racist to keep the coverage fair and balanced. And the very, very ugly Laura Ingraham. On today's episode of Fox and Friends, a conservative pundit offered her unique take on the Obama administration's decision to stand down in its fight against universal access to Plan B birth control. Check it out.
What do you think about this?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a good deal for pedophiles, good deal for people who commit statutory rape against young girls.
Right, Laura. I'm not sure how helping young girls avoid unwanted pregnancies is going to encourage pedophilia, but I am sure that those comments are very, very ugly. Wow. Okay. Steve in Haymarket, Virginia, it says here, you normally, is this the Steve who normally calls up to disagree with me?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
So. I'm so ashamed of myself.
Well, how so?
Well, at any rate, no, I think that's, I will probably anger you anyway.
Okay.
Because I think it's kind of ironic that we are trying to get rid of that which defeated the British and defeated the United States Army And because they don't have guns, the Syrians are dying one after another one. We're going to try to get rid of that, but everybody agrees, even President Obama agrees, that this, snooping, obsession is the thing that will destroy our freedom.
So, you're first of all, you're trying to bring gun control into this. Let's just set that aside for another time. I am not sure I understand your position. I mean, I'll just say my position very clearly on this. I understand the need for governments to spy, and I respect it and I honor it. And I understand the need for that to be kept secret. And I respect and honor that. That said, I don't think it should become a money pot for big corporations. And I don't think we should have a revolving door where our heads of security and our senior military and governmental and national security officials end up making, six, seven-figure salaries at defense contractors and when they retire, or when former executives of defense contractors become the heads of our security agencies. And it just all seems too much like the hog farm to me.
Yeah, it's a little incestuous. No, wait a minute. It's really incestuous.
Yes.
And that is,
and that's not good.
Both the stuff, this, despicable characteristic of every form of pro-government, anti-government that you can think of. And it, like I say, the only result of this path is to destroy everybody's freedom, and everybody knows it. It's just some people are being paid enough money to where they don't actually care.
Yeah, I think the perfect analogy for this is the private prison industry. Hey, let's privatize our prisons. Some private corporation can do it cheaper, more efficiently, better. And as soon as we do that, we discover that the private prison industry is lobbying Congress. They're giving money to members of Congress. They're buying them meals. They're running ads for or against them. They're actually writing legislation to make to increase the penalties and lengthen the sentences. And by the way, when people get out of private prisons, they're more likely to re-engage in crime, to be recidivists, than when they get out of public prisons. It's like there are certain government functions. I don't want the government making my shoes or my computer, but there are certain government functions that really should be done by the government, and spying is one of them.
But it's just that they don't need to make so much money.
Well, I don't think that the old government spies, James Bond never, he's a fictional guy and it's Britain, but I mean, the point of the matter is that spies never got rich in the past.
Right.
Now somebody's a decent spy. I mean, we had a guy call into the show yesterday, and he was talking about how he had been a spy in the Army. He'd been in Army intelligence, and when he got out of the Army in his 20s, he was recruited to be a spy on behalf of the CIA or the NSA, one or the other, by four different defense contractors, and offered hundreds of thousands of dollars to do so. And, wildly more than he would have been able to make if he actually worked for those agencies. We should not have these intermediaries. We should not have this system that is just sucking down our tax dollars and also is creating an unaccountable buffer between our government and the people. And so, Steve, interesting that you're agreeing with me. I look forward to we'll debate something else some other time. Thanks a lot for the call. Michael in Chicago. Hey, Michael, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Yeah, you know, it's a really interesting topic because I think it can transcend the NSA topic, the political lines. I tend to lean pretty far right, but I feel very uncomfortable with what was going on, and I give a lot of credit to that Snowden guy. I used to work for Ericsson's AT&T CAM about 5 years ago. They call them CAMs. They don't call them divisions. Ericsson's a Swedish company that builds all the infrastructure for the cellular networks, the internet.
Right.
And, when they started splitting the information in all the switch facilities for Verizon and AT&T and Sprint, I mean, that stuff happened before 2001. And, they used to do it just for the the Middle East. You know, the big lines that are coming out of the big cables that are coming out of the ocean in San Francisco and Southern California. You know, I think a lot of Americans felt okay.
Those would be coming out of Southeast Asia, principally. That would be spying on China, I would guess, primarily.
You know, and personally, I didn't have a big problem with, you know, duplicating all that data on foreign citizens, on foreign governments. I mean, that's just...
Well, that's what you expect your spies to do.
Spying 101, but when they're doing it on U.S. individuals, just blanket, you know, you hope that people on both sides of the aisle can come together and say that doesn't seem right. We gotta change something here. So
yeah.
I know I lean a little bit right. Tom, you're on the left side. Hopefully, this is one of those issues that we can come together and say, yeah, maybe we need to make some changes here.
I think it is, and this is why I think it's, you know, it's so encouraging that, you know, Ron Wyden and let me find the story here that we've got both Democrats and Republicans. Talking about doing something about this. I mean, I guess I've lost the paper, but there's both Democrats and here it is right here. Mike Lee, Republican from Utah, is joining, you know, John Tester and Mark Begich and Al Franken and Dean Heller, Republican from Nevada. You know, Democrats and Republicans, all of them as senators, for 2 years they've been trying to get these secret interpretations aired. And, you know, they're coming together to say, hey, wait a minute, let's bring some light into this and let's talk about this. I agree with you. I think this transcends politics. I don't think it's about good president, bad president. I don't think it's about good politicians, bad politicians, or good party, bad party. I think it's about a broken system that needs to be fixed. It needs to be fixed with all hands on board. And I'm just horrified that so much of our media won't even talk about it in that context. Rather, they want to go for the easy soundbite of is or is not Edward Snowden a traitor. Frankly, that's not the issue. Michael, thank you for the call. Well said. Marty in Evergreen Park, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Marty, we have just a minute left till the break. It's yours.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just wanted to chime in about the Eisenhower speech. And it was, you know, really moving to hear that, especially when nowadays it seems like we value more the weapons of war and all the machinery of destruction rather than even the human element of the people that even operate them. It seems like we put more value on those machines than we actually do our soldiers and our veterans and actually care for our people. It just seems like we've grown very, it's just a weird dichotomy, you know.
And we're not only doing that with our military, we're doing it with our police as well. There was an interesting piece in the New York Times today about how Rahm Emanuel is reducing crime in Chicago, murders down. How are they doing it? Putting cops on the streets. And, you know, instead of buying more high-tech equipment, which is what all the defense contractors want them to do. And so, yeah, I'm with you, Marty. Thanks. That was well said. And we'll have to revisit Ike a little more often and a few others. There's a John Kennedy gave a speech on peace that I really want to play one of these days. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. Do we have to worry more about the government or the corporations? Or should we not worry about any of it? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay. John Kennedy. Well, actually, I'm going to pick up phone calls. I've got this incredible set of clips of John Kennedy talking about peace, and I so want to play them for you. We will do it later in the week. It's Tuesday. We've got the rest of the week. We will get to it. But I think it's a good time. Anyway, Evelina, listening on KBBF in Santa Rosa, California. Evelina, what's up?
Hey, just really grateful to share a couple of my thoughts with you. Things that may or may not be on your radar. Number one, the unmasking of the United States privatized espionage complex. I have a theory that the U.S. government National Security Agency is complicit with the corporations to be able to catch pockets of community organizers that are protesting big corporations like B of A and Google and GE and Walmart that aren't paying their taxes and withholding billions in offshore accounts. So could this be a way where the U.S. government is actually working with corporations to spy on protesters. And my second one, are we facing a shock doctrine moment of Naomi Klein with the introduction of the thought police? Mr. Snowden said that due to Facebook and everybody knowing your friends and your books and your causes, and that before you finish your sentence, they already know where you're going.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think you're right on both counts, Evelina. And it concerns me. And I think that this is one of those, what Ed Snowden did is one of those wake-up moments. It's causing a lot of people to go, hey, wait a minute. And hopefully the kind of conversation that we've been having on this show for the last couple of days will migrate into the corporate media and into the mainstream media, although I suspect it won't, because I think that the large corporations that are running, in particular the television industries and television networks, they would really rather not have a conversation about how large corporations are getting rich off our need for national security. But I think that your analysis is absolutely accurate. Thank you for the call. Greg in Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I was listening to you after the Eisenhower there, and you said we need another statesman like him. I think we could also use a man like Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, you know, who wouldn't step in the ring.
Well, that's essentially what Ed Snowden did. I mean, when Cassius Clay converted Islam and declared his opposition to the Vietnam War, he was so trashed. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that. Maybe you are, Greg. He was so trashed. I mean, most people figured this man's never going to fight again. He's never going to be in the ring again. He's never going to get any coverage again because he took those two positions.
He gave it all up to stand for what he stand up for what he believed in. And I'm thinking, you know, we don't have another back then. We don't have a sports figure to equal him. But boy, if we could talk, just think if we had every professional sports person, like, let's shut down the NFL until they bring our troops home. You know?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Cassius Clay, when he became Muhammad Ali and came out against the war in Vietnam, that was such a pivotal moment in American history and in American sports history as well. And, you know, thanks for the reminder, Greg. Good to hear from you. Rick in Weston, West Virginia. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Oh, not much. I was listening to your program. I wonder how many people know that Jimi Hendrix was an airborne.
He was in the Army. I didn't know he was Army airborne.
He was an airborne.
Huh.
He was airborne when Hitch was 2 years.
Huh.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Look it up. You know, I've been following this thing about that Snowden guy.
Mm-hmm. I'm listening.
I think Verizon and all these big communication companies, Caltown, to the CIA and that, the national whatever, they should have stood up a little bit. You know what I mean?
But they're making money on it, too. Do you really think that any of these companies would be handing money off to or handing your information off to the government without saying, by the way, there's a cost associated with this. Please reimburse us.
Yeah, see, that's another thing I don't understand, too. Like you were talking about intelligence agencies being turned over to for-profit corporations. I actually think that they are jeopardizing our national security.
I agree, and that's my concern. I think that that's a legitimate concern. Like I said, I'm not anti-spy. I'm not anti-intelligence. I am opposed to for-profit corporations whose first allegiance is to the dollar rather than to our nation. And in some cases, corporations that have foreign stockholders, I'm opposed to them being the ones who are holding our secrets and not being accountable to we the people. Excellent point, Rick. Thanks for the call. Wayne in Newmanstown, Pennsylvania, the last minute of the program. Wayne, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I've heard a lot of my conservative friends talking about this stuff, and of course it's all blame Obama and, you know, all
yeah,
that stuff. And when that doesn't work, it's blame 9/11. And, you know, in 2000, I used to work for Earthlink, and they made headlines in 2000, before any of this, before Obama, before 2011, where they stood up and had argued about installing something called Carnivore. That the government had wanted them to install that captured email, captured internet traffic. So, you know, all this stuff has been going on for a very, very long time.
Yeah, although if my recollection serves me correctly, in the late 90s and around 2000, The companies that were speaking out and outed Carnivore were opposed to it. They did not want to be part of that. Am I remembering correctly?
Yeah, you're correct, but yeah. It's my understanding that quietly they eventually installed it anyway.
Yeah, and probably got very well paid for it. Because after all, they're in the business of making money too. Which is, this, you know, takes us back to the original sin. Thank you, Wayne, for the call. It's not money that's evil. It's the love of money at the root of all evil. Anyhow, don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. Check out pdamerica.org. Check out ourfuture.org. Check out free-don.com. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.